Metro Council for May 18th to order. We have a quorum, and Councilor Chase is running a little late, but we'll be here in about 5 or 10 minutes. First item on the agenda is citizen communications. I have a couple of cards, and I think I have more coming in, but I have only one of them that is not related to, well, maybe it is, that is not related to the issue at hand, and that's Maria Van Fleet. So if you would like to come address the council, Ms. Van Fleet.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So my name is Maria Van Fleet, and I have a business counseling, a small business business. Yeah, that's what it is. So I've worked with the Small Business Administration through the Small Business Development Center, Clackamas Community College, for 10 years. And I've noticed throughout the years of doing small business counseling that the Metro license is a wonderful thing for contractors, and it is a wonderful thing for landscapers and landscape maintenance. However, it does not include the cleaning and or janitorial companies. And I do, you know, my business is to help people open up their businesses. So I see a big problem with the licensing of them having to go to every single city that they want to promote their business at and actually pull a license, because in every single city that it is, at least here in the Portland metro area, it is considered to be conducting activities, business activities, even if you are leaving business cards. So that is really increasing the cost for these small businesses that are just starting. These are people who want to probably supplement their income, and they're just looking to do some janitorial at night, or maybe they want to start a housekeeping business. And I really have for many years wondered why Metro does not include these type of businesses within your Metro business license for contractors, because they are indeed independent contractors, number one. Number two, they would greatly benefit from having that possibility of operating within this Portland Metro. And of course, they still have to get their home city business license, plus Portland, you know, and if it's not here, then they would have to pull whatever other license is needed. But I find it that I've seen a lot of people getting fined because they left the business card or they left the flyer and they did not have the business license for that city. Well, they don't really have any business yet. They're trying to get it. And, you know, it's really the same issue that the contractors face. So I really would like for the council to consider to add these people to that business license. It'd be great revenue source for the Metro, because you would have so many people actually obtaining this. In our business, single-handedly, we only serve the Latino, the Spanish-speaking businesses, because that's our niche of the market. And just within last year and May, you know, the few months this year, we have helped started 275 businesses. And so many of those are contractors, construction contractors and landscapers and landscape maintenance. But I would say that at least 40 of those were cleaning and janitorial businesses. And I just see that they're at a disadvantage.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah. We don't know the answer.
Well, we'll get back to you.
I'm glad you don't either, because I certainly don't. But, we'll get back to you on that.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Interesting suggestion.
Council President, if I could just mention that in my 11 years on the council,
that I know we've had the business license program, but it's never gotten a review. So I sit here not being able to tell the story of why we even have it and what's the benefit. So in your following up with that, with us on that, I would need a little background, because if you asked me to tell you, I'd flunk that test.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll get some information back to the council, and then we'll get back to Mrs. Van Fleet on where we what we can do and where we are on that. Consent agenda. Today's consent agenda consists of three items. The minute for the May 11th council meeting, resolution number 17-4795, and resolution number 17-4796. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes and the consent agenda is adopted. Next item on the agenda are resolutions. Resolution number 174800. Ms. Papsdorf, could we have that read by title only?
Resolution number 17-4800 for the purpose of approving a multi-year commitment of regional flexible funds for the years 2019 to 2031, funding the Division Transit Project, the Southwest Corridor Transit Project, arterial bottleneck projects, and active transportation projects, and authorizing the execution of an intergovernmental agreement with TriMet regarding the multi-year commitment of regional flexible funds.
Okay, is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second. Moved and seconded. All right. Staff report.
Alyssa and I are here today to present to you a resolution that would allow us to move forward with a bond agreement with a TriMet. Let me make sure this works. Just to back up just a little bit, if you'll remember, last summer, you approved a policy decision for the allocation of regional flexible funds, our transportation funds that come through our agency. And we continued with that policy direction. We continued funding for our existing high-capacity transit bonds and our region-wide programs. We also approved continuing funding for community projects that you have recently approved of. And we had a new initiative because we had anticipated more funding through the last federal allocation program, and we used most of that money to initiate project development on several projects. That payment schedule for the project development work ranged from, it was a multi-year commitment that ranged from $5 to $18 million between the years 2019 and 2034, and was designated for the projects you see listed on your screen above you. And in the December timeframe subsequent to that decision, there was additional direction that was provided to staff at the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation to also bring back a proposal to see if there was something that could be funded from this revenue stream for enhanced transit corridors. But that project did not receive a specific allocation of funds at this time. Right after we made the policy decision that was based on a revenue forecast, we were informed by the state of Oregon and the Oregon Department of Transportation that one of our revenue streams that we rely on, the CMAQ funds, the Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Funds, would likely be reduced because of new eligibility by the areas of Salem and Eugene to receive those funds. And since it is a limited federal pie that does not grow in terms of what the state of Oregon receives, that is likely going to reduce the amount of funding coming into our region. So we had to develop an approach that would manage the risk to the reduction of those funds before we issued or before we proceed with this bond agreement with TriMet and lock those funds into the bond payment schedule. So that would that will result in revenue that's going to be available for the project development work. So we have brought, developed, working with TriMet and the Oregon Department of Transportation, a phasing of how we are going to proceed with this bond agreement. The first phase of this will mitigate for the potential loss of those CMAQ funds, and so we are only going to do a first allocation of a reduced level of funding from $3 to $12 million per year over a shorter time period, only through the years 2031. And of course, this will reduce the proceeds coming from that bond that we can provide to the projects. So these, again, here are the list of projects that had been designated to receive bond funding, bond proceed funding. When the policy was adopted in the summer of last year, that first column represents the amount that we had anticipated going to those projects. And as you can see in the second column, we have reduced the amount that we are going to allocate to those projects in agreement with TriMet and ODOT, and then with the recommendation from JPACT this morning. And as you can see, a couple of those projects will be held whole. Some of them will be reduced, and the enhanced transit proposal, we are postponing a recommendation on that until we have further knowledge about the CMAQ program and how much funding we are likely to have a reduction of. So there is future work that will that lies ahead for us. Councillor Dirksen is actually serving on the committee, the statewide committee that is working with ODOT to figure out a new allocation formula for those CMAQ funds that will determine how much money will be going to Eugene, Salem, the Rogue Valley, and ourselves. Once we have a resolution of the impact of that reallocation of money, we will come back and consider additional bond payment agreements if we have more than what we have mitigated for. And we will then address that direction that we received from JPAC to consider another proposal for funding enhanced transit. So the resolution before you today is asking for you to approve and or authorize Metro and TriMet to proceed with the Phase 1 bonding agreement. With that, I'll turn it back to President Hughes.
Thank you. Questions for staff or comments? Councillor Harrington?
I just have one specific question. I understand this proposal, get it, got to proceed with it. I have this recollection that when we provided the policy direction, we were hoping for some bond proceeds that I think we were then hoping to redirect for, was it Safe Routes to School funding? And I assume that either if that happens, that will proceed, or if there are proceeds, given that we've had to reduce some other projects, that first that those proceeds would go towards these projects, or is there another option?
Sure. So the Safe Routes to Schools funding within our regional flexible fund process actually happens in two places. There was $1.5 million that was directed for educational and promotional work. That is within those first two steps that are not part of this agreement, and so that is still funded at that level. Then you also see the active transportation funding, project development work on the active transportation funding. That straight Safe Routes to Schools is a component of those projects, and so they, in terms of developing that those projects and the and preparing them for an ask of construction dollars, that is being reduced from $2 million to $1 million in this first round.
Okay, well, I still have an open thread then on the bond proceeds, so we can take it offline and close that.
So these are the bond proceeds here, but that's so they will be reduced to $1 million from $2 million. Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Councilor Dirks.
Thank you. In your presentation, mentioned the action taken by JPAC this morning, or as I gathered, will gathering and miss
that. I mentioned briefly. It very briefly, yeah, that there was a recommendation for approval of this by JPAC.
Wanted to make sure that was stated. I could elaborate a little bit if council would wish. We had a significant discussion at JPAC this morning about this and the impacts that the potential reduction in CMAQ funding has on these other regional flexible funds funded projects. And there was expressed considerable dismay around the table, and rightly so. And I think I told one of the members after the meeting is like choosing this between these projects is like trying to choose which of your children you like the best. And so making it clear that this isn't our choice, but something we have to do because, as was said, you can only bond money that you know you're going to have. So once we know if there will be other money available, then we can come back and we'll come back and reevaluate. And that provided some sort of comfort, but small comfort, but hopefully we'll be able to come back and do that as we identify. And I would say not only because of a resolution of the CMAQ funding, but also when once we discover what is coming out of Salem for the transportation package, that might give us additional knowledge or resources that we consider as well.
Thank you for that. Other questions or comments? Thanks, folks. We have a roll call.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Councillor Harrington?
Yes.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Collette?
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Council President Hughes?
Aye. Motion carries. Next item on the agenda is the is our ordinances. And we begin. I also want to note as we go through this next set of items that I'm going to switch the order of the agenda, and we're going to begin with Ordinance 17-1402, and then proceed to 1401. In part because we don't think there are very many folks who want to address the issue in 1402, unless it would be Friends of the Japanese Beetle. And they don't have very many of them. So we will open the discussion. This is first read and public hearing on Ordinance Number 17-1402. Ms. Papsdorf, could you read the ordinance by title only?
Ordinance number 17-1402 for the purpose of amending Metro Code Chapter 7.01 relating to excise tax regarding exemptions and declaring an emergency.
Mr. Brower.
Now for something completely different. Good afternoon, President Hughes and councilors. For the record, my name is Roy Brower. I serve as director of Metro's Solid Waste Information, Compliance, and Cleanup Programs within Property and Environmental Services. And I have with me today Mr. Clint Burfitt, who is an entomologist and program manager for the Insect Pest Prevention Program with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. And as some of you are aware, the Japanese beetle has become a significant problem in a part of Washington County that has ramifications for how yard debris and soil in that area can be managed. And so I've asked Clint to provide you with a brief overview of the beetle and the ODA's eradication plan, and then I will give you a brief overview of the emergency ordinance before you today. Clint?
All right. Thank you, Roy, for the introduction, and I'd like to thank the council for hearing me today. My experience with Japanese beetle goes back to 2003 when I served as an entomologist for Utah Department of Agriculture. At that time, I worked closely with my counterpart in Colorado, and I remember that I ran into him at a meeting in 2003, and he said, "Oh, hey, Clint, we found Japanese beetle in Denver, but it's not going to be a problem here. It's too high, it's too dry, it's too cold, it's too wet. Summer wet, winter dry." And then a couple of years later, ran into him again. He's like, "Yeah, no, we found it in Colorado Springs, but, you know, it's not going to be an issue here. But if you were to go to the Colorado Extension fact sheet today for Japanese beetle, it is now the top ornamental pest in Denver." So what happened between 2004 and 2017? They didn't have early detection surveillance traps out. They were making assumptions without data. The cornerstone of Oregon Department of Agriculture's program is to mitigate and also put out a lot of traps. So we know that Japanese beetle hasn't established outside of the Cedar Mill area, and that we have mitigated this over the course of 70 years. Our program goes back into the 1940s. The reason why we're concerned about this is it likes to eat what we like to eat. It's got about 300 different species of plants that it prefers to eat. Many of these things are things that we grow in our gardens, things that we like to grow around our houses, and more importantly, I guess, from my perspective, is these are things that we grow in the Willamette Valley as an agricultural product. Most specifically, the Oregon's nursery and greenhouse economy in 2014 was worth around $800 million. I think this year it's closer to $1 billion. This, if we were to walk away from the Cedar Mill infestation, this would be a light switch for this industry. Everything over a number 5 container, which is synonymous with the 5-gallon bucket, would no longer be welcome in its primary market. 85% of that $1 billion is exported, much of it going to states that do not have Japanese beetle. Anything with soil would no longer be welcome. So sod, any bald and burlap, nursery stock would no longer be welcome. Secondarily, it would increase production costs. So that's code for you're going to have to spray more. So we grow a lot of orchard fruit, berry fruit, vegetables, seed production in the Willamette Valley. Japanese beetle over the long term, say the next 10 to 15 years as it establishes and spreads throughout the Pacific Northwest, would mean that if you want to grow things that you've traditionally grown in places like the Willamette Valley, you'll have to use wide-spectrum insecticides to produce the crops that you had traditionally done. Oregon's wine industry in 2015 was worth approximately $100 million. Recently, I was up in the Great Lakes wine growing region, and I'm always curious about what viticulturalists are having to deal with. And so I asked one of the viticulturalists, you know, what sort of pests or diseases they're dealing with. And she said that they have to spray three different times to control for the adult Japanese beetle to get a harvest of grapes off. This is not something that we currently have to do in Oregon. So again, it would impact our ability to grow grapes. This is the paradigm that we use when we're looking at new plant pests. On average, we find about 7 new exotic terrestrial arthropods to Oregon. Many of these things are things that we don't know how to find, so they've already established, they're already common and abundant when we find them. But with things like Japanese beetle, where we do know how to find them and we have a history of dealing with them, the most cost-effective option is to maintain an exterior quarantine, put out traps, and we find low isolated populations to conduct eradication. After that, if the eradication fails, then we go into containment. And if you look at the chart, containment is significantly more expensive than eradication. Once containment fails, then it's asset-based protection. So that's back to, well, our agriculturalists and community members are going to have to use pesticides more often. This is the number of traps we've put out in Oregon since 1988. One thing happened in 2006 that has directly led to me sitting in front of you today, and it was a budget reduction that directly impacted our ability to put out traps. As my German boss likes to say, a gram of prevention is worth a kilo of cure. I believe the kilo of cure that he's referring to in this case is money. The eradication project right now, over the next 3 years, I'm projecting to cost about $3 million, where it would have cost us an extra $10,000 a year to put out the adequate number of traps. So this is a map of the unincorporated part of Washington County where it's been detected. The red traps are places last year that we found the Japanese beetle, and then the green traps are places where we did not find the Japanese beetle. So from this map, you can see that it is localized. So the bad news is this represents the largest Japanese beetle infestation in Oregon's history. This is a reproducing population in Washington County. The good news is out of the 369 beetles that we detected, 2/3 of them came from 3 traps. So it is localized. The reason why we're worried is that these are photos from the quarantine area, and it's got lots of irrigated turf or lawn. Roses, so it's got many of the prime plants that would support a Japanese beetle infestation. And that photo is the bottom of one of our traps, shows the number of beetles that we found in one of those traps last year. So it's abundant and doing rather well there. When we found it, we came up with an eradication plan that we proposed to do an eradication on approximately 1,000 acres. This is based on trapping data, which impacted 2,400 to 2,500 single-family residences. We took a 6-prong approach to this. The most important part of this is community engagement. Our goal 5 months ago was to get ownership on a grassroots level for this project, and I think that I can report here today that that has been successful. We've received a little over 2,100 consent forms saying, yes, please, Oregon Department of Agriculture, come to my property and conduct an eradication treatment with an insecticide. I did not think that would be possible, so I am very impressed. The second is we have a diverse team working on the project, all the way from national and global thought leaders to local gardening club members and local HOA members. The third is the use of a Celeprin G insecticide. EPA calls this a Group 28 reduced insecticide. What that means to the rest of us is that when this was originally registered, it was registered as non-toxic to terrestrial vertebrates and birds. It currently has on the label non-hazardous to humans and animals. It's pretty unheard of to see that on an insecticide label. The fourth is utilize biological controls in the woody riparian areas that are within the project. Five is changes in green waste management in a control area within the eradication boundaries, and that's what brings me here today. Originally, when we looked at this, we saw that the green waste was moving to commercial green waste recycling operations, composting, and I thought, okay, this is good. It's already going to composting. But then we learned that the composting stations where these are going to don't necessarily have the ability to control moisture content, which means it's, they're not getting hot enough to kill the Japanese beetle adult life stages. So then what the status quo meant was that this was a recipe for moving Japanese beetle throughout the Tri-County area. And then the sixth, again, the cornerstone is high-density trapping. Right now, we've got about 7,500 traps that are going out statewide, and roughly 2,300 of those will be in the eradication area.
We'll hold for questions until the end. I just have a few brief remarks on how this relates to Metro and what we're bringing to you today. So staff at Metro has been working very closely to facilitate the collection and disposal of material from this quarantine area beginning June 1st. We've been working closely with ODA, DEQ, Washington County, City of Hillsboro, local haulers and waste companies. Our prime goal is to keep the cost of having to dispose of this yard debris and soil nearly the same as if the material were going to a compost facility. So that's one of our prime goals. So the actions taken so far, first, DEQ and Metro have allowed the disposal of this material at the Hillsboro landfill, which typically does not take this type of waste. It will take soil, but not the yard debris. But they've been approved by both to take this. The COO at Metro has exempted the yard debris and soil from the quarantine area, from having to pay the regional system fee when it's disposed of at Hillsboro. And we've been working closely together to identify and establish a nearby local yard debris reload and consolidation point that can be used by local residents, businesses, and landscapers working in the quarantine area so they can consolidate their material and then get it delivered to the landfill. And this is Northwest Landscape Service at 1800 Northwest Cornelius Pass Road. In addition, Washington County commissioners will be deciding next week, I believe, on whether to waive the franchise fee in Washington County. So the ordinance 17-1402 before you today will provide a very narrow new exemption to the collection of the solid waste excise tax. The exemption will only be available to the state of Oregon, an emergency eradication quarantine area, and only in response to a state-declared public health, agricultural, or environmental emergency. So just to give you real quickly some numbers, assuming that 1,000 tons of material is generated within the quarantine area each year, Metro would forego about $29,000 combined in regional system fee and excise tax. But had this material gone to a compost facility, neither the regional system fee or excise tax would have been collected anyway because it wasn't going to disposal. So staff recommends that council adopt ordinance number 17-1402. The ordinance includes an emergency clause that allows the council to consider and vote on it today. And Clint or I are happy to answer any questions you might have about this.
Questions for staff? Yeah, I don't have a thing. Go ahead.
Okay. This seems like a really pretty significant emergency that we have to address. What happens to all of this when it gets to the Hillsboro facility? Is it composted? How is the Japanese beetle contained? I'm assuming that we're assuming that it's in the materials as it's delivered to Hillsborough. So then what happens to it? I don't know what that facility does with it.
Yeah, Council President Hughes and Councillor Collette, it will be put immediately into the working face of the landfill and disposed of. So more waste will be put on it fairly quickly after it gets put into the landfill. So it's just basically disposed of within the fill itself.
So the assumption is the beetles are killed off by being buried?
Buried deeply.
Okay. Is there going to be an attempt to do additional monitoring around the area, around the landfill?
That's correct. Our trap numbers last year were around 2,500. This coming year, 7,500, the bulk of those being in Washington County. So anywhere that we've got irrigated turf grass, 7 per square mile. In the infested area, it's 200 to 300 per square mile.
I'm a little concerned because the landfill sits in close approximation to a fairly large greenhouse operation. So I would be a little concerned. I want to make sure that we can assure them that there is not going to be any expansion of the investment.
Any of the places that have received this waste in the past, in addition to the places that the waste is being transferred to in the coming years, will have high levels of traps, typically about 50 per square mile around those locations.
Okay. If you need a place for them, I got a yard. So.
Excellent. You can email us at japanesebeetle@oda.state.ora.us and give us your address and you'll get a trap.
Great. Councillor.
So I think you addressed two of my questions, and that is that both for the Hillsborough landfill surrounding area as well as the reload site,
That's correct. There will be
additional traps put in. What is, can you help me understand the potential for, so within the quarantine area, I imagine at least two scenarios, and a third, but one scenario is when I lived right on the edge of this quarantine area, I had a landscape maintenance company, and they would take the material away themselves, and so now I assume they have to take it to the reload place or to the Hillsborough landfill.
That's correct.
Okay. Then the other is that we would also do yard work, and I would put stuff in the yard debris bin. And so now the local hauler will have to go to either the reload site or to the landfill. And my question is, so then from point A to point B, either the reload site or the landfill, do those creepy crawler bugs, which I remember from living back in New England and especially loving mums, not mums, poppies, whatever those beautiful flowers are, they don't come out of the truck, or
out of the truck.
They don't try escape.
So as far as the curbside pickup, you're going from one can to another can, preferably into deep burial. Landscapers are going to have a variety of different methods in which they're going to transport these. We're working right now to get a messaging product via direct mail to the 2,400 single-family residences, multilingual, that will speak to the landscapers in a language that they understand, which is money. If you take your stuff here, and here are some guidelines, then you won't have to pay for your disposal fee. So it's a cost savings for them to do this. We've also got quarantine signs going up just in case people, you know, are in the process of hauling something out and they see a sign or like, whoa, I better call that number. But it will be an ongoing process to educate everybody involved about the changes. And there is, I mean, the fact is Washington County has a problem, and it's a Japanese beetle problem right now. So our efforts right now are to contain that, and they're better than what we started with. They're not 100% perfect, but they're a lot better than what we started with. And I think that we can continue to, put out detection traps. And this year's our risky year. Next year we should have one order of magnitude less beetles. The year after that, one order of magnitude less beetles. So if everything goes as planned, then we should see a significant reduction each year moving forward. But this coming year is the year that we need to make some changes.
Great. Thank you. I just hope we don't have migrating bugs.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
But thank you for the work you do. That's great.
Ms. Keene first, and then, Councillor Craddock.
Thank you. Similar question.
question.
You're on.
Okay, thank you. I'm curious, but why was the Hillsboro landfill selected? I have to say, I'm not familiar with it. It's not one that we're using regionally, as far as I know, for our garbage. Is there a specific reason why the Hillsboro landfill was selected? It's interesting that it's right in the middle of this prime farm country, and it's like it would be actually a risk. I would think it would be more important to take this somewhere else further away from this important farming area.
Councillor Craddock, it happens to be the nearest disposal site to the quarantine zone. It's about, I believe, 10 or 12 miles away. They do take a lot of, they're considered a dry waste landfill, so they typically take construction demolition, debris, MRF, material recovery residual. They typically don't take any kind of putrescible waste. So this is an exception, but that's probably why you've not heard as much about them. But I do know they're close to President Hughes's home. So
mile.
Be careful. Oh,
really? So it's important that you choose select a landfill that's closer than further away, because it could exacerbate the problem.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
So, Councillor Dirksen.
Thank you. A couple of questions. First of all, I want to make sure that I would recognize this beetle when I see it. The photograph, the pictures we see in here, are those accurate? It looks like it has a black head and body and brown abdomen. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It's about the size of your pinky nail.
Okay.
It's exceptionally, I think, very distinctive for a beetle.
It's not the size, though.
Iridescent green pronotum, and then a beautiful iridescent red body.
And then it seems there are pesticides that are effective against this. So would or could the landfill, the face of it as it's being, as the contaminated debris is being put into it, could it not be treated with the insecticide to make sure that it does, in fact, kill all the beetles that come into it?
Yeah, I think we like to use the data from our traps to direct any sort of insecticidal action. The deep burial is a method of disposal that we've used when we get infested shipments, say, of nursery stock from places like Oklahoma. Then we can move those right into deep burial. So we know that deep burial is an effective form of disposal for this particular insect. And then, again, with a high density of traps, if there's a problem, then we can come back in afterwards.
Thank you.
That particular location is also, in addition to being located near greenhouses, is also located right on the edge of Jackson Bottom wetlands, and so would not be an ideal location to do sort of a blanket spray of insecticides, even if they are safe.
Okay.
Councillor Clinton.
Another question. So have you only found samplings in Washington County, or is that where you think the focus is? My district is Clackamas County. We're a huge agricultural county, as you know. Obviously not that amount of the beetle there, but have you found any of it? Is that an area you're watching as well?
Absolutely. The area that we've watched most closely, at least for the last 20 years, is Portland Airport. This beetle loves light, is attracted to bright lights, and air cargo flights originating from infested states commonly bring this beetle to our airport. We've been doing prophylactic insecticidal treatments around air cargo going on, I think, since early 2000s, maybe late 90s. So most of our activity has been at the airport. We've done several research projects showing that we can differentiate now between the beetles that would be from Oregon versus beetles that are coming in from other places in the country. So we've done quite a bit of work on this. But yeah, I'd say Clackamas County is certainly on our radar.
And so far not terribly infested?
No. The beetles that we find are right next to the air cargo, and we find one or two a year. And then, you know, we've got, I think, 700 traps at the airport. You know, 99% of those are negative. So it's just this hard thing where you've got populations that are so large where these flights are originating, and then they're loading the flights at night with these bright lights, and the beetles are just coming into the fuselage.
Okay.
So
thank you.
You're welcome.
Councillor Chase.
Thanks. Well, they say the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, and the next best time's today. And I wish we would have taken the advice of others and invested earlier on. And now we're faced with this scenario where I appreciate you acting quickly and really getting on top of this as quickly as we can. I just wanted to understand and just clarify. So I understand we're not incurring any expenses here because we are focused on the solid waste, the fee, and the exemption would not have applied to this disposal anyway because it would be composted. So that's just one quick clarification that I think I'm hearing.
Well, it normally would have been composted. This is going to disposal. And because it goes to disposal, that's where our regional system fee and excise tax get applied. In this case, we're recommending that it not get applied so that the cost differential stays the same, essentially.
Yes. Okay. I think I understand that part of it. Then I'm just trying to understand. I'm looking at Councillor Stacey's. For some reason, it's not showing up on my own pad here. So I'm borrowing.
It's new technology.
Yes. So then, it's the what would establish this exemption would be our authorizing it here, and what would regulate it would be the emergency eradication quarantine that would be set by the state declared public health. And do they set jurisdiction? I guess I'm wondering, you know, how do folks know where that applies, or how do folks know whether they're qualified for this exemption, or how do we contain the exemption where it's only appropriately used?
Councillor Chase, there's a specific eradication zone quarantine area that has been designated by the Department of Agriculture. The boundaries are very clear and set, and as you said, they're putting in signage so people know if they're going into or out of the quarantine area. Also, they're in touch individually with each of the households to let them know what and where they can go and whether or not they're subject to the quarantine.
And so, and then at the facility, there will be some tracking as to whether or not folks are coming from that location?
Correct. I think we're going to be controlling that through a locked gate and a combination code, and you have to have that code to get in. And my staff will be inspecting that periodically. I've also got some staff who will be working with some of the landscapers in that area in conjunction with the Department of Ag.
And then the exemption would apply only to the debris and not to the regular solid waste that folks may be bringing. And is it an honor system? Is there some way of verifying that or spot checking for that?
We'll be monitoring that, but correct. The way the exemption is written, it's yard debris and soil. So any normal putrescible waste or construction and demolition waste, all of that would still be subject to the same rules and requirements as any other waste.
And then if the state declares a much larger or different areas, will this automatically apply, or will we then review that?
If it meets the conditions, I guess I would look to OMA. If it meets the conditions, I think it would apply. But it has to meet those three conditions, state of Oregon, emergency eradication, quarantine, and a state-declared public health, agricultural, or environmental emergency. So if it meets those, it could apply. But I think those are pretty rare.
Well, that sounds great. I think it might be helpful for us to have something in our system where if it does get expanded, we review that again and learn and understand, okay, this is working the way we thought it would. The exemption is working the way that we thought it would. We're not seeing a revenue loss. Maybe we are seeing a revenue loss and we're fine with it, but just that we're tracking and knowledgeable about are other things being included in that exemption that we didn't project, that weren't intended and aren't, you know, BEETL-oriented. So I think that might be something that's helpful as a sort of a check if this does get expanded, even if it meets those criteria, if that sounds helpful.
I think we could do that. I think if we could tell you that if they expand the area, that we bring you a report or at least information about what's going on, even if your action today does automatically Roy's nodding, so I'm assuming that that we have the ability to do this.
Yes.
Thank you.
Councilor Harrington.
I just wanted to add that this area, this quarantine area, is in my district, along with Council President Hughes' district, and he lives really close to that landfill. It's just outside of both of our districts. And I wanted to compliment all of the outreach that's been going on, as well as the briefings. I know myself here on the Metro Council, the Washington County Board of Commissioners, I've done outreach with them, all very well versed in the problem, the plans, and moving forward, as well as the community. I've had the benefit of being contacted by people concerned, hooking them up, trying to make sure folks know where to get information, and it's been tremendous. So thank you for all those efforts.
Thank you for the compliment.
Councilor Stacey.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, an emergency ordinance takes effect in a nearer time period than the ordinary 45 days, 90 days that would otherwise be required for an ordinance following a first and second reading and approval. Your liaisons were of the opinion that the emergency should be declared and that it should be made effective immediately as opposed to 30 days or 2 weeks, and therefore the ordinance reflects that it will take effect immediately.
Thank you.
Councilor.
Council, other kind. Council President Hughes, member of Council. Councilor Stacey is mentioned something that I was going to just state to you procedurally. This is a sort of unusual situation that we're doing today. Our charter requires two different things when we're declaring an emergency and when we are, which says that it will go into effect right away, and when we're going to pass something with immediate adoption rather than two hearings. And our charter requires that for something to be adopted in just one hearing, that it needs to be voted on unanimously and contain findings on the need. Our ordinance does contain findings on the need for it, and to have it passed immediately today without a second read, it must be passed unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you for that. And I just, when we talk about losing revenue, which really we aren't going to because it's revenue we wouldn't have gotten anyway, and in the range of $29,000, and you look at what is, I think, a $600 million industry in Washington County alone, we go back and think about if we'd have spent that $10,000 a few years ago, we wouldn't be faced even with this problem. So it would be, I think my mother used to talk about
penny wise.
I never listened to my mother, so.
But she was right about that.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
Always.
We're here today.
The other
she
one was
would be
stepping
pointing
over
to this
dollars
and saying that this is exactly that thing. So I think this is great. The other thing I like about it is that if the state expands the emergency area, we may get information about it, but we don't need to act on it. And so it doesn't require going through our process to delay the application of what might be an emergency, nor, it sounds like, once the state determines that the problem's been dealt with and there is no longer an emergency, it sounds like our mechanisms go away too.
Correct.
So, again, it's kind of self-regulating, and I think that's a nice part of it too, because I don't want to ever have to look at a picture of that. and nor do I want to see any around my house, by the way. So with that, any further discussion? Could we have a roll call, please?
Do you have to have a hearing?
We have to have the public hearing.
I'm sorry. I have to have, I kind of thought we did, but maybe, okay. So let me open up a public hearing on ordinance number 17-1402. See if there's anyone who wishes to testify either in favor of or opposed to the ordinance. Not seeing anybody come forward. I'm going to close the public hearing. And did I get a motion before? Okay. Could I have a motion?
Move approval of ordinance number 17
at 1402.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Okay, now a roll call.
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Councillor Harrington?
Yes.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Collette?
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Council President Hughes?
Aye. Motion carries unanimously, so it is in effect as soon as I sign it, I think. Next item on the agenda is Ordinance 17-1401. And could we have that read by title only?
Ordinance number 17-1401, for the purpose of adopting a landfill capacity policy and amending Metro Code Chapters 5.00 and 5.05.
Hey, Mr. Sliman.
Mr. President.
And Mr. Jacobson. Yes, sir.
Will you hear a staff report before a motion?
Yes.
Okay. Very good.
That's what it says here.
This is a first read. Do we need a motion?
This is first read.
Do we do a motion on this?
So we don't need a motion?
We wait until the second. Read. Okay.
Right.
Very good.
Good afternoon, Council President Hughes, Metro Councilors. I'm Paul Sliman, your Director of Property and Environmental Services. Today I'm here with Bryce Jacobson of my department to provide an overview of the legislation that you will be discussing. We have a very short presentation and are happy to answer any questions afterward. As with everything we do in overseeing our region's solid waste system, we approach efforts to bring about important public benefits. Under state law and its own independent home rule charter, Metro has broad authority and responsibility for planning, managing, and overseeing the regional solid waste system. Metro manages the region's waste on behalf of the public for the purposes of protecting people and the environment, getting good value for the public's money, keeping our commitment to ensuring the highest and best use of materials, being adaptable and responsive in managing materials, and ensuring services are available to all types of customers. Let's remember that after all of our region's hard work to reduce, reuse, recycle, and compost, Greater Portland still sends more than 1 million tons of garbage to landfills each year. Metro is working to put some of that garbage to use, such as to make compost or energy, to reduce impacts of what we throw away. Despite that, for the foreseeable future, our region will rely on the many landfills available to us in meeting our needs for final disposal. In doing this, we strive to protect the environment and the public's health. Metro is committed to managing our region's garbage with a focus on protecting people and Oregon's environment. Reduce our impacts on communities. We are concerned about the impacts that our garbage has on the communities that host facilities and landfills that our region relies on. Make efficient use of space. We have hundreds of years of existing landfill capacity in northern Oregon and southern Washington to choose from, and not an inch of it should be wasted. And as always, keep focused on using less stuff. We will always maintain our focus on reducing what we send to landfills by informing and educating the people of this region, implementing innovative programs, removing food and other materials from our garbage, and continuing our waste prevention efforts. I'd like to hand it over to Bryce Jacobson, a senior planner in Metro's Property and Environmental Services Department. Bryce has over 20 years of experience in waste-related policies, and he will present the project history and an overview of the proposed legislation. Thank you. Bryce?
Thank you, Paul. And good afternoon, Metro Council President Hughes and Metro Councilors. This afternoon, I'll be presenting Ordinance 17-1401 for your consideration. And I'd like to cover three things today. The first is a project background and the history that helps show how we got to this point with this project. Second, an overview of the policy and legislation for your consideration today. And I'll finish with the proposed implementation timeline. So as you may recall, this project started with Resolution 144589 back in December 2014. And as Paul mentioned, and it's worth repeating, that in that resolution, Metro Council described their growing concern about the impacts our garbage has on the communities that host the landfills that receive our waste. It It's also well documented that we have at least 100 years of existing landfill capacity in northern Oregon and southern Washington to choose from. The resolution reflected general concern by Metro Council about Metro's waste contributing to the need to build new landfill space and specific concerns about continuing to send Metro waste to Riverbend Landfill in McMinnville, Oregon. So through this resolution, Metro Council directed staff to develop a policy that keeps Metro Region waste from contributing to the expansion of any existing landfill or the creation of any new landfills. So this map identifies the landfills within about 180 miles of the Metro Region, as well as our public and private transfer stations. And if we just focus for a moment on the landfills on this map, the landfills on the east side of the map are generally larger and newer. I think most of you have personally toured several of these east side landfills and seen for yourself the large scale of several of these facilities. These include Wasco County, Columbia Ridge, Roosevelt, and Finley Buttes. All four of those east side landfills could continue operating at current disposal levels for over 100 years. On the west side, Cowlitz County, River Bend, and Coffin Butte are generally older and smaller landfills with significantly less capacity than those in the east. Now, not visible on this map, but still well within 180 miles of Metro is another smaller western landfill. It's called Short Mountain, which is just outside of Eugene, Oregon. When we take a closer look at the landfill's capacities, Oregon and Washington landfill permitting documents confirm that there are many years of future capacity among most of the landfills on this map. The capacity data in this chart spans from a low of 2 years at River Bend to a high of 186 years at Finley Buttes. And a couple of important things I want to point out about this chart and this data. The data on the slide is based on the 2015 site development plans on file for permitted landfills in Oregon and Washington, so the data is 2 years old. Also, as Roy mentioned in his last in the presentation before this, Hillsborough Landfill is included on this list, but it's not authorized to take putrescible waste at this point. So back in 2015 and early 2016, we took part in three Metro Council work sessions to get your input and guidance on this project. First, you helped staff get our arms around the project and develop a scope of work and timeline. Next, staff took a very close look at the issue of landfill capacity, how it's calculated and how it's defined. At work session, we presented three ways to determine landfill capacity, and with the council's help, we developed a preferred option, which I'll cover in the next slide. We also modeled several impacts from implementing the new policy back in calendar year 2016. Those included things like rates, emissions, and traffic congestion. In early 2016, we also reached out to interested stakeholders to provide updates on the policy direction and potential impacts, both at local government meetings as well as the Westside Economic Alliance. So, simply stated, the preferred approach says that if a landfill operator seeks and is given authorization by DEQ to expand their landfill, they will become ineligible to receive future Metro Region waste. And this was the actual language that we brought to work session back in late 2015. And you might recall that we had a lot of discussion about landfill site development plans at that work session. And I want to note that we worked closely with Oregon DEQ staff to identify the best existing regulatory tool to signal a landfill operator's intention to expand and DEQ's authorization to increase a landfill's current capacity. And that is the DEQ-approved landfill site development plan. Now, for the Washington State landfills, there's a similar process and site development plan on file with Washington State Department of Ecology. So staff used that preferred approach to capacity and developed an ordinance and the code changes that you see before you in Ordinance 17-1401. So I want to provide you with a high-level overview of the ordinance and code changes. First, this legislation would add two new definitions to Metro Code. The first one is limited capacity landfill, and a landfill that sought a site development plan amendment for more capacity but didn't receive DEQ or Department of Ecology approval for that amendment before May 25th, 2017. And by the way, that's the scheduled date for the second reading of this ordinance. A new landfill, similarly, is any newly permitted landfill that receives initial DEQ or ecology permission to receive waste after May 25th, 2017. And so how would those new definitions be applied under the proposed ordinance? The proposed code amendments would prohibit disposal of waste generated in the Metro Region at limited capacity landfills or new landfills. And that would apply to waste from Metro's two public transfer stations, as well as the privately owned transfer stations that take Metro region waste. And it would also include all waste types, so wet, dry, special waste, and that's usually things, industrial materials like refractory brick, as well as cleanup waste like petroleum contaminated soil is also included. And the ordinance has two important dates that I want to finish my presentation with this afternoon. The first is the effective date, and that's the date of Metro adoption, and that could potentially be the date of the second reading of this ordinance. Again, that's May 25th, 2017. The second is the implementation date, and that's proposed to be January 1st, 2020. And I think it might be helpful to illustrate how the almost 2.5-year gap between those two dates could work with a hypothetical example. If a landfill in Oregon that currently takes Metro region waste submits an application to DEQ to increase its capacity and DEQ approves their amended site development plan for additional capacity anytime after May 25th, 2017, that landfill would then be identified as a limited capacity landfill. Now, under the proposed ordinance and code changes, that landfill operator would, however, be free to continue accepting Metro region waste for the next 2.5 years, but on January 1st, 2020, they would be ineligible to receive any further Metro waste. So the reasons for the long lead time in implementing this proposed legislation, this provides plenty of advance notice to allow Metro area landfill customers to find other disposal options. And the January 1st, 2020 implementation date lines up with the end of the 30-year Metro disposal contract and its 90% flow guarantee requirement. And with the expiration of that disposal contract, it's quite possible that after January 1st, 2020, there will be many more landfills available for Metro area public and private solid waste facilities to choose from. And that's all I have today. With that, I'll turn it back over to President Hughes for discussion and questions.
Okay, I think that, do we have any questions for staff, first of all? And I have, if you poke your little button, I can actually see you now. No one seems to be popping up on my screen. Huh? Okay, so let's go then to the public hearing. And I have a number of blue cards. What I'm going to do after I open the hearing, if you don't mind, is call you up in groups primarily of four, although I don't know that you all are divisible by four, so... Mm-hmm. That might not work so well. Okay. I'm going to do two groups of four, and then I'm going to have I'll have the two that I know are waste management people together at the end. So the first group is Leo Crick, I'm sorry, Elsa Purse, Ramsey McPhillips, and Susan Watkins. If you are on opposite sides of the issue, will you just sort of please get along?
Mr. President, there was one exhibit, I think, from one of our current panel.
Yes, Ms. Meredith, we have
only one copy and we're sending
it down.
We
had one copy of your material and we passed it down, so we've all looked at it. Okay, so we'll start with Mr. Crick.
Honorable Council President Hughes and members of the Council, for the record, my name is Leo Crick. I'm a resident of Yamhill County and one of seven directors on the Yamhill County Soil and Water Conservation District. I'm testifying on the district's behalf today. Thank you for recognizing Metro's policies regarding solid waste management affect your neighbors and the watersheds we all live in. Clean water, food safety, livability are important to all of us, whether we live, work, or recreate in the Metro region or in Yamhill County. Yamhill Soil and Water Conservation District supports and encourages the adoption of this ordinance. Metro's staff report clearly documents the Council's awareness and recognition of other available landfill solutions and the Council's desire to seek alternatives that limit the need for expansion of current landfill facilities. The district appreciates Metro's leadership to recognize and consider the environmental consequences and to explore sustainable solutions regarding solid waste management. We also appreciate the specific concerns mentioned in the report regarding the Riverbill landfill's lack of capacity. Riverbend landfill is located a short distance from McMinnville. The site was once farmland with productive soils located on the banks and within the floodplain of the Yamhill County of the Yamhill River. The original concept for a landfill along the river in the floodplain was ill-advised. What started as a small local landfill transformed into a large regional landfill over the years that has welcomed solid waste from reaches outside the local community. The influx of garbage has brought the landfill to near capacity. Our conservation district has long-standing concerns about the landfill and the expansion plans and the operations impact on water quality, air quality, fish and wildlife habitat, and other resources. Many residents, farmers, businesses, and concerned citizens have similar concerns, including the following: documented contamination in monitored wells, downgrade of the landfill as outlined in the Mark Yinger Associates report from July 28, 2015. Proposed expansion that allows more waste to be placed over the top of unlined landfill cells. A failing gas collection system that's unable to bear the stresses and weights of the on-site conditions. A location where 52% of the landfill currently sits in the floodplain and is subject to high water flooding. Water quality concerns from where the communities and farmers rely on the water of the Yamhill for municipal uses and food-producing irrigation. The landfill is located on soils that are likely to liquefy in an earthquake. In closing, thank you, Councillor Stacey, for bringing this issue to the forefront and for the Council's consideration of this important issue. And for raising the awareness of Metro residents and other contributing communities of the impacts of this important policy. In the interest of public safety, water quality, wildlife resources, and human health, Yamhill County Soil and Water Conservation District encourages the Council to adopt this ordinance 17-1401. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Burse.
How do I make this go?
Need some technical help there. There we go.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, councilors. My name is Ilsa Purse. I live in Carlton, Oregon. Riverbend Landfill in the bend of the South Yamhill River is partly surrounded by a modest buffer of land owned by Waste Management. Family farms surround the buffer or border the landfill itself. This USGS map shows that Riverbend sits in a very strong to severe seismic hazard zone. The most severe area is along the river. Everything underwater in this picture is in the severe seismic zone. Imagine a 9.0 earthquake on one of the many winter days when this part of the dump is underwater. Garbage in this part of the landfill is in unlined cells that is improperly compacted, and the garbage is actually below the level of the water. Columbia Ridge Landfill in the driest part of the state is surrounded by a 10,000-acre buffer owned by Waste Management. This USGS map shows that Columbia River is in a moderate earthquake zone, the least seismically dangerous. This is the leachate pond, and it normally holds about 13 million gallons of toxic leachate. A 9.0 earthquake on a day the pond is surrounded by water would be a disaster. 6,500 greenhouse gas spewing tanker trucks haul away more than 32 million gallons of leachate a year. Riverbend's leachate problems result from the amount of rain that falls on the dump. Dumps in drier areas do not create this much leachate. An expanded landfill will create more leachate for several years and will require even more tanker trucks. When the leachate can't be trucked away due to some snow or ice, leachate has been known to leak into nearby creeks. How will it be hauled away after a major earthquake? Where will the leachate from an overflowing pond go? And you'll hear more about this monitoring well problem in a few minutes. Tests on water that feeds the stormwater collection system have shown the presence of heavy metals and, on multiple occasions, excessive amounts of E. coli. This polluted stormwater is then piped into nearby fish-bearing creeks. Thousands of seagulls descend on the dump and surrounding farms every day, destroying crops and potentially spreading serious bacteria. Earlier this year, salmonella was found in hazelnuts at a farm across the road from the dump. Salmonella can be traced to bird droppings. There are lots of birds and lots of droppings at Riverbend. Garbage blows onto nearby property and into creeks. Along with birds, polluted runoff, blowing garbage, there is a horrific stench, made worse by wet weather. DEQ's odor nuisance study, now underway, is only one of three in the entire state. Dumps in drier areas tend to smell less. In conclusion, Riverbend Landfill was sited in the wrong place before DEQ knew what it now knows. The location is seismically unstable, often surrounded by floodwater, has uncontrollable bird problems, creates a horrific stench, and covers surrounding farms with blowing garbage, and it is potentially leaking. Yamhill County does not deserve to have this environmental nightmare in its midst. Please vote to keep your garbage from destroying our farmland and waterways and wetlands. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. McPhillips.
Hello, I'm Ramsey McPhillips from McMinnville, President Hughes, council members. I'm going to make three one-minute comments, speed remarking, because I have a lot to say. Number one, it's important to remember the genesis of this whole conflict, and that is way back when the Oregon legislature allocated $1 million for you to find a new landfill to replace the St. John's leaking landfill. They really couldn't find anything because when they did do the research, everything conflicted with farmland or seismic issues. So along came Waste Management and offered you a wonderful facility up in the gorge. And they struck a bargain with you and said if they were going to build this incredible RCRA facility, they would require 90% of your garbage. It made sense. They need to pencil it out and have a guaranteed flow for a number of years. Well, you signed that agreement, and what did they do? They spent the money that you gave them and bought Riverbend Landfill. So the 90% was not to go just to Arlington. It was to go to a waste management facility. They always planned, if you signed that agreement, to buy Riverbend. And they did. So if you were to take this ordinance, you will be correcting a Metro vote many years ago which specifically tried to avoid sending your garbage to vulnerable farmland and seismic aquifers. Number two, you remember I spoke to you before about the leachate. A little bit of an update. I've checked with where your garbage is now going from the Washington County area to Coffin Butte. They do have a wonderful wastewater treatment plant, which is right next door that they take their garbage to, which is not in a seismic vulnerably liquefied area. They also have storage tanks in case there is an earthquake to hold the garbage or to hold the leachate in case there is an event. As you know, Riverbend doesn't have that, and I made the remarks before that if the landfill does have an earthquake, that the 18 semi-trucks a day of leachate has nowhere to go. If you, right now, of course, you know that it's going to three different places, and I added up the miles, it's over 250,000 miles a year of the leachate from Riverbend going to these wastewater treatment plants. And lastly, I would like to make a note that you have options for different providers for your disposal. You all know who they are, you just saw a map of them. There's Republic Waste Management, Recology for some of your composting, the new facility up in Washington, and Waste Connections. I would note that of all those options, only Waste Management does not provide on-site composting facilities. So you're in charge of taking the money from the garbage pail and being responsible and prudent with it. I hope that you take that money and give it to companies which are actually working to make compost. For instance, when you drive into Riverbend, you don't have an option in case you do have a load of refuge. You just throw it away. And of course, we know that 40% of the pie wheel of garbage is green waste, and it's what causes the greenhouse gas. Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. Watkins.
Good afternoon. My name is Susan Watkins. Thank you, President Hughes and members of the Metro Board for allowing us to speak today. I am a landfill neighbor. I live, my house is a mile and a half from the landfill, Riverbend Landfill, as the crow flies. I look straight at it from my window. This morning, as my husband and I walked out of our house to come up to Portland today, we had the most horrible stench at our house from the landfill, the worst we've ever had in the 16 years we've lived there. They say they're doing everything they can to make it smell better, and obviously that doesn't work. I am here today to urge you to adopt Ordinance 17-1401. After seeing the various charts that show you the location and capacity of the different landfills available to you, I really can't understand why you would ask any other landfill to expand in order to accept your waste. I can only assume that when you throw something away, you have no interest in where away is, as long as it's not in your neighborhood. With 500 years capacity in existing available landfills available to Portland, I don't see how in good conscience you can condone expansion of any other landfill. We all hope, I think, that before that capacity is exhausted, we will have found better ways to treat our waste and to minimize it. Now, you may say, however, the Yamhill County Commissioners have approved this expansion. But I'm here to tell you the reason they most often cite, at least to us in the county, for that support is that they believe having a landfill within Yamhill County will keep our garbage hauling rates low to local residents and businesses. So a couple of years ago, I sat down with the records in the county to see what has happened to those garbage rates. And what we have in Yamhill County is probably pretty typical. We have 10-year exclusive contracts, but with 4, 5, 6 years to go on those contracts, the haulers come in and ask for renewal for the 10 years. And the county has always given it to them. These contracts have never once gone out to bid in Yamhill County. So there is no evidence whatsoever that having the landfill there is actually keeping our rates low. We don't know if our rates are low or not. And I want to note that also waste management often points to the emissions from trucks going all the way to Arlington versus Riverbend as being negative, but it has been pointed out here, Ramsey said, 250,000 miles of the leachate trucks with their emissions, which usually are not cited by waste management. So thank you for listening to us.
Thank you. Thank you, folks. The next group, Susan Meredith, Sid Friedman, Kevin Jeffries, and Luis Perez. And Ms. Meredith, it was your material that just passed through all of us, so we had the wrong Susan. Go ahead, you can lead off.
Good afternoon, Council President Hughes and councilors. My name is Susan Meredith, and I live in McMinnville. As you've already heard today, there are many complex issues surrounding Riverbend. However, there is one particular issue that I want to be certain everyone understands. In May 2016, DEQ documented a groundwater contamination violation at a Riverbend compliance well. Well, here are the facts. The sampling data in May 2016 for this well, which is located downslope from the three original unlined cells, showed levels of four inorganic compounds above their permitted limits. Although these four compounds are naturally occurring materials, when they are present at elevated levels above background, they are widely recognized by landfill hydrologists as leachate indicators. They are not volatile, and their presence cannot be attributed to landfill gas. A June resampling verified the May elevated levels. Now, since more than three compounds were above the limits, DEQ was required to launch an investigation. In August, Waste Management implemented a plan to evaluate the source of changes in the groundwater quality in this well based on additional monitoring. The November sampling data now showed a total of six compounds above their permitted limits. These data were verified in December. Since this was the second DEQ violation, and because it was still unclear what the source of the contaminants is that are consistently present in this well, in early 2017, DEQ required a new investigative plan from Waste Management. It launched in April and will be completed in early 2018. In the interim, however, given the continuing presence of several leachate indicators in this groundwater compliance well, and until the DEQ investigation proves that some other unknown source is the actual source of the groundwater contamination, leachate leaking from the unlined cells up the slope from this well appears to be the most probable source of the contaminants. And although there is another closed landfill upstream from Riverbend, substances flowing into the river from that site cannot be the source of this well contamination due to the distance of this well from the river and the fact that this well lies upslope from the river. In addition, I'd like to point out something else, which is that your approval of this ordinance would send a very strong and positive signal to your constituents that, A, you are sensitive and have seriously considered the impacts of Metro Waste on the communities where it's disposed, you're concerned about the impacts on the environment where Metro Waste is disposed, and that now you're doing the right thing and being proactive by directing Metro solid waste to those sites which are most compatible. Therefore, your vote to approve Ordinance 17-1401 is a win-win for everyone. And lastly, you may not be aware that the political scene in Yamhill County has changed. Last fall, the former mayor of McMinnville, Rick Olson, was elected to the Board of Commissioners and took office in January. During his tenure as mayor, Rick openly and publicly opposed Riverbend Landfill. Since this new board has not yet voted on any issue related to Riverbend, the current position of Yamhill County on Riverbend Landfill is completely unknown and cannot be anticipated. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mary. Mr. Friedman.
President Hughes, council members, my name is Sid Friedman, representing Friends of Yamhill County. We urge a yes vote on the Ordinance 17-401. For all the reasons cited in the staff report and in the ordinance's recitals. Riverbend is nearly full. I don't know what Waste Management has been telling you or your staff, but they have explicitly told Yamhill County officials on the record that their proposed expansion will not pencil out without the continued flow of Metro garbage and the landfill will close. The handwriting's on the wall. Any expansion seems increasingly less likely. Pass the ordinance, make the diversions permanent, and move to a sustainable future in an orderly fashion. Garbage is a competitive business. As detailed in your staff report, there are hundreds of years of existing landfill capacity in the region. When push comes to shove, Waste Management or a competitor may well offer rates at another, more environmentally friendly landfill. They may offer rates that are even lower than what you now pay at Riverbend. As Recology's general manager in McMinnville said, Riverbend is not the cheapest option out there. You can offset transport with a lower disposal cost. Regardless, the Yamhill River flows right into the Willamette and then on through the heart of the metro region. This isn't the 1950s. It's way past time to stop dumping garbage on our riverbanks. And in terms of greenhouse gas impacts, in addition to the leachate trucking, which you've heard about, at Riverbend, there is a much faster release of methane, which is a very potent greenhouse gas, because of the wetter climate, as opposed to one of the drier, more modern east side landfills. So to sum up, it's time to move on. McMinnville already has. Their city council has previously sent you letters expressing its opposition to Riverbend's expansion, and I believe you'll hear from one of their councilors in a moment. McMinnville's new transfer station will be operational next year, and McMinnville's waste will be going elsewhere. This is an opportunity to make orderly plans, as I said, align your actions with your adopted policies, and pass the ordinance, shifting Metro's garbage away from an antiquated, leaking, seismically unstable, flood-prone garbage dump right by a major river. Thank you for your time, and thank all of you for your hard work and service to the citizens of this region.
Thank you. Mr. Jeffries.
Thank you, Council President Hughes and Metro Council. Thank you for having me, and forgive me for my froggy voice. I was up until about 11 o'clock with our budget meeting last night, and I was suffering with a cough the entire time, so forgive me if I lose it a little bit. As was mentioned, the City Council has written letters in the past. I think the last one we sent to you was in 2014, expressing our frustration and our desire for Riverbend Landfill to not expand. And as you were approaching the subject, we voiced our concerns then to you, and I just wanted to just reiterate them today. Though we've had some leadership change, as was mentioned, the mayor has moved on to the county. Our new mayor is Mayor Scott Hill, and he is a strong proponent of no longer using Riverbend Landfill. And we recognize the concerns that we had back in 2014 still exist today. I don't want to make the impression that by asking you not to send your waste to Riverbend that we are trying to build capacity for ourselves. This is not the case at all. In fact, Sid, could you offer this to the assistant, please? We've introduced a draft resolution to the council about maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and basically what it does is it will divert all of our waste away from Riverbend. We are seeking other places, and we're gonna ratify this by resolution. That any hauler that we contract with will not be allowed to send their waste to Riverbend. And I just want you to know with all sincerity that we see Riverbend as a real threat to the economic vitality of McMinnville. The wine industry in particular is at a great risk. The other issue, too, is that we suffer many of the same issues that the city of Portland does with urban growth boundary and expansion and where we build homes. And right now, most of the development is happening on the southwest side of town, which is very close to the landfill. It's the most affordable place to build. And it is the smelliest part of town. And I can tell you that's where I live. That's the district that I reside in. My home faces north as I walk out my front door in the morning. And so the winds from the south are coming directly from the Riverbend. And I can tell you on many occasions, especially in the wintertime, as I step out of my house, I am blown away by the smell that exists right out my front door. And I live in one of the most desirable communities in Oregon. And this is just not what McMinnville is. McMinnville is Oregon's downtown and has been recognized nationally as Oregon's Main Street, as the America's Main Street. And so I ask you to please not send any of your waste to Riverbend and join us in not doing that. And I also want to thank you for being great neighbors and allowing us to come here and speak to you on this issue.
Councilor Harrington.
I have two questions for him, may I ask?
All right, yes.
Thank you for providing a copy of the proposed resolution to us. Just from it, on the last whereas, it notes that the city has authorized the construction of a transfer station, blah, 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 blah. When is that transfer station due to be completed?
They're breaking ground on it, and I believe late this summer it should be operational.
Okay. Then the other question is, this is a proposed ordinance, and is it slated to be acted on before our action next Thursday?
I would not think that. No, it wouldn't be that soon. Probably in the next 2 months, I would say.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll go ahead.
Well, there's one more person. I did have a question.
Okay. The next person. Okay, Mr. Perez.
Yeah. Hi, Honorable Council. I want to please apologize for the way I express myself to you. I'm not as clean, you know, speaking person as most of these folks that are speaking here, you know, to you today. But I'm a Metro resident. I was, you know, so living in McMinnville, which is a beautiful town. That's where my oldest daughter was born. And I've been on, you know, Beaverton for 20 years plus, you know, being a Metro resident now. And I would like to, you know, direct myself to you and ask, like, you know, if it's our garbage from the Portland area, try to find a more friendly environmental, you know, site to dump our own garbage. I don't think we would mind paying a little bit extra to protect, you know, rivers and waterways. You know, a lot of people here from the city, they love to go fishing. They love to go and enjoy the rivers. So I think we want to help that. I also would like to say I'm an immigrant. I've been an immigrant, you know, like 30 years ago from Mexico. My hometown has a very similar experience, and if I may add this, I like that. You know, it's in a basin, it's fed by a creek. You know, through 50 years of dumping garbage with no consciousness around this lake, I'm sorry I didn't bring any pictures, I didn't have enough time to bring any pictures, but it's so sad and so heartbreaking, you know, breaking to see what it was 50 years of that beautiful lake or to what it is now, you know, 50 years later, dumping the garbage. The rain, the runoff has no control, no matter how much, you know, we try to prevent it. It's going to go down and it's going to do the lowest, you know, spaces, which is our waterways. So I'm here to, you know, to please, you know, ask you to do the best on the planning and to listen to, you know, my family residents to find a different, more friendly, and, you know, economically friendly site, you know, instead of the river bend. I'm a landscaper myself. I've been a landscaper for, you know, almost over 25 years, close to 28. And we have to abide by lots of rules. You know, speaking, I've heard, you know, the previous, you know, commentators, like, how much the, you know, it's an old ecosystem, you know, environment that we have in here. We have to abide to all these rules, especially on creeks, lakes, rivers, you know, greenways. And it's great. It's great. And I was longer in Mexico. I know how much damage we can cause. And right here, it's nice that we have, you know, that we have to educate ourselves to protect all this, you know, richness that we have on our planet. So if we are doing that as a landscapers that we are enforced to do, or we get very hectic, you know, civil, you know, penalties if we don't, I don't see how we can, you know, allow our own garbage, if we has nothing, you know, we, you know, and economically, you know, friendly about it, to be dumped right by the river. I just don't see how that makes, if you look at it, how, you know, it makes any sense. So please, I ask you to listen to everybody and hope I made myself clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor.
I do have two questions. Thank you. And I'll just throw them out, and anybody that has some perspective on these. And a couple of perspectives, I think, generally in favor of the landfill expansion, and I think you've answered these before in the past, so I appreciate you addressing them again. One is the seismic and the perspective that an additional cell being created at the landfill might actually stabilize the existing facilities because of the requirements, seismic requirements around a new cell or expansion. So just your perspective on that, and then also around the perspective that this could be a facility that gets built, whether Metro sends its solid waste there or not, and that that could actually mean a longer life for the expanded facility. So I just would love to, and I know you shared that in the past, but I'd love to be reminded kind of with your perspective regarding those.
I'd like, President Hughes, Councillor Chase, I'd like to take a crack at those, if I may. First, on the seismic piece of it, at one of your work sessions about a year or two ago, you may recall that either your staff or a DEQ representative addressed this issue and said that there was no evidence at all that a new cell would provide any seismic stabilization to the older parts of the dump that were built to lesser standards. And while this wasn't part of the DEQ presentation, I would add that the plan, the proposed plan from Waste Management, calls for the placement of more fill or more garbage, eventually capped, on top of portions of the existing older parts of the dump, which will be likely to collapse in a subduction quake zone. So the foundation there is unstable, and putting a additional edifice on top of an unstable foundation is not likely to make a bad situation better. Now, on the issue of the possibility of expansion regardless of Metro's action, as I said previously, in Yamhill County, Waste Management has explicitly told Yamhill County officials in public settings on the record that their proposed expansion will not pencil out without Metro's garbage, and the landfill will close. Beyond that, there's no reason to think that if they were to expand, that they would stop after an additional 10 years of capacity. They've previously proposed expansion on approximately 70 more acres in addition to the 29 or 30 that there is in the current proposal. They have a long, long track record of broken promises as regarding what the final grade was going to be, what the final size was going to be, where the final footprint would be. And so in 10 years, when, regardless of what's told to you now, in 10 years it's entirely foreseeable that other people will be in place in their management, and they will say, well, circumstances have changed. In the past, we wanted these additional 70 acres, and maybe we're going to ask for all that 70 now, or maybe we're just going to ask for another 10 or 15 acres, but it's entirely foreseeable that this will not be the end of it. So those are my responses. Perhaps one of my colleagues has something to add.
If I could answer the second question, at least from our perspective, if they have 2 years capacity right now, and if we were to divert all of our trash someplace else, and that gives them 5 years of capacity, that would be okay with me. Right now, all of their energies are being put into managing and remodeling the shape of this thing and digging up new roads, which stinks terribly. You have to cut into the side of this mountain that's made of garbage. If their priority then going forward, they'll have some capacity for managing the environmental impacts, that would be okay. I would be okay with that. Right now, that is not their priority. Their priority is, where are we going to put this stuff? And the environmental impacts are just simply not a priority to them. So if slowing down their growth means that they can start putting energy in some other places to become a good neighbor, that would be a benefit to McMinnville.
May I add one question, one comment? Councillor Chase, to your comment about the seismic issue and adding a new cell being, making it more stable. The DEQ has found that portions of the landfill surround areas surrounding the landfill, because they can't bore under the existing landfill, are on liquefiable soils. And there's no reason to believe, because it's in a floodplain and near the river, that there aren't more areas of the current landfill also on liquefiable soils, which means in the event we have the seismic 9.0 that's coming, adding another cell is not going to do anything to help the current situation.
Hey, other questions? Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Finally, Paul Burns and Mike Dewey. Guys can decide which order you want to go in.
Yeah, thank you. What I thought I'd do, Mr. President and members, Mike Dewey on behalf of Waste Management, just set the tone here. Mr. Burns will talk about where we are on the expansion and the buffer zone final grade. So I think we have a picture, too, to show you in terms of the landfill. And then I'll go into to the reasons why we think this resolution ought not to pass. We're not here to address the allegations. DEQ has heard these over and over and over again. Many are not factual. If you have any questions about seismic, any of the allegations, we can address those, but in due time, offline, whatever. But the clock starts to run. And so hopefully we can get this through pretty quickly. Thank you.
I'll go quickly, and if my name is Paul Burns, I'm a director of operations for Waste Management. I'm at 7227 Northeast 55th Avenue in Portland. I'll jump in real quick. The plan that you see up there, there's the white zone in the middle that says existing landfill is 88 acres. There is limited capacity there, as you've heard today. We are working on two different projects right now. One of them is what we call our final grading modification plan. So we have final grades for the landfill that set the slopes, maximum height, and configuration. what we're looking at right now is there's an area at the south end that you can see it in the gray zone. It says operation support kind of above that and to the right, where the words with grasses is on the plan. That's where we're looking to adjust our final grades. That will give us about 490,000 cubic yards or about 18 months of capacity at our current tonnage rate. So that's one. That's within our current existing footprint, our current permitted uses, that thing, and we're on final stages with the DEQ permit for that. To the west of that, or left on the drawing, is an area, 29 acres, for future landfill. That's what we call our expansion area. That area is designated, and that's what we are calling our final expansion, and contrary to what you heard a minute ago, that is the final area on our site that we can develop. There's rivers, wetlands, floodplains, lots of reasons why we aren't going elsewhere, and that's why we've turned those into stewardship lands. So those are repurposed and will be repurposed for other things to benefit the community. Our expansion area of 29 acres, right now we're working through LUBA, the court systems. The Yamhill County has approved the zoning there and our site development plan in Yamhill County. That's been appealed on numerous occasions to LUBA, the Court of Appeals, and right now that's sitting with the State Supreme Court. Both parties have briefed, they submitted the appeal, we briefed, we're waiting to hear back. And what we understand, it's anywhere from 6 weeks to 3 months, hopefully.
They don't have to take the case.
Right. So the Supreme Court has not yet agreed to take the case?
Correct.
Yep.
So that expansion area gives us right now about 9 years of capacity, 10 years at our full capacity. Right now we're running about half speed, as you heard earlier. That, with running at half speed without Metro Waste right now, would give us about 18 years of site life there. So that's where we're at. It's 10 years with our full capacity, 18 years with what we're doing today without Metro Waste. Questions? I know I went fast.
Questions? Any technical questions before I go into the? I'm happy to wait.
Want to wait until they're through and then
you want
to ask the questions?
I can wait.
Yep. Okay. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, thank you again, Mike Dewey. Dean Camphor and I met with staff who's doing the disposal RFP, and we wanted to find out what their thinking was. And we learned one thing that was very valuable. In terms of the RFP, we know that when you approve the RFP and you go out and score it, and it may be out late this year or early next year. So we'll know what the disposal system is going to look like in maybe 10 months or something like that. We found out one thing that we know on the RFP, that there will be 20 points scored out of 100 on a resolution that you pass for, I think, major contracts like this, and it would include the food waste, which is coming soon, is you have a situation where it's diversity, equity, social justice, those types of issues. So that's the 20 points. So we have no clue what the RFP is going to look like. We don't know how we're going to respond. If Riverbend's not in the mix, obviously we don't respond. But the reason you ought to wait is because you don't know what the process is going to look like. We may offer the best price by far at Riverbend. It may be the best transportation component. You may require compressed natural gas for all the vehicles. We're the leader in the state and have the most in the state right now. There may be environmental reasons that Riverbend is a preferred option. We may do a spec fuel there. We may do hydrogen there. We may do an eco park that we are doing now in Reno in terms of an expansion. So what I'm saying is there are a lot of opportunities to take a look at having Riverbend be in this mix. And you've diverted, in our opinion, from the roadmap, and the roadmap's going to get you there. So you're not going to know if Riverbend is not in the mix. And you might get a very, very good deal. You may not. And we may not even be providing the We may not win a contract. Hopefully, Columbia Ridge is in play. The other consideration, I'm not sure how you're going to do this. Another consideration is you need an option on the west side. The inclement weather that you have periodically on the east side, so the waste has to go somewhere. Now, it could potentially to go to Coffin Butte, but they may not be in the mix based on when the RFP is and the scoring. And the last thing I will say, I don't know the gentleman's name who talked about what Waste Management said, and we will close the landfill if we can't accept Metro Waste. That's not true. We continue to go through this expansion, and we're talking about 10 years or 18 years. So whatever you do, Waste Management has made it very clear in terms of their business plan. This is a regional asset, and we will continue to have waste going to the landfill. And, again, we will continue to operate it. So with that, Mr. President, be more than happy to answer any questions.
Okay. I know that Councillor Chase has it. Oh, I'm sorry, Councillor Arrington had a question.
Thank you. So you've mentioned, Mr. Burns, that the application, that the zoning was done through the county, it's gone to LUBA, that there have been appeals to the Court of Appeals, there was a result from that, and that has been appealed to the Oregon Supreme Court. Correct. And that Supreme Court has not yet decided if they'll take the case. I understand that. If they decide not to take the case, then does that mean that Waste Management has what it needs in order to proceed with the building the construction of this expansion?
Sure, that's a good question. And if the Oregon Supreme Court does not take the case, what happens is the Court of Appeals decision stands. They basically said LUBA got it correct. So what the process would be, we would go back, the Yamhill County would revisit their decision for the zoning, and then it would go back to LUBA for one more round through. And we have one item left that we're talking about, and its cumulative impacts. And it's pretty clear in the judgments and the discussions as to what that means. It's long and verbose, and I clearly don't have enough time today. But.
Yeah, and I might add, Mr. President, Counselor, that with regard to DEQ, because of the appeals, the litigation, DEQ has put on hold any decision until Yamhill County makes the final decision on the land use decision. And but they've done their technical review, so they're not asking any more questions. They've been through this now twice, and so questions that were asked have been answered. So they don't need to reinvent the wheel. So we feel very comfortable as to where DEQ is at this point. But they're on hold pending what the Supreme Court does in the county.
Councilor Dirksen.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
I just want to make sure I understood the point.
All right.
That the Yamhill County Commission still has a future action to make a final land use decision.
That's true.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So I just want to make sure that it's clear for the record, because I've heard some people said this, some people said that. There's had a half-answered question. But very bluntly for the record, if Metro chooses not to continue to send waste to Riverbend, will you still pursue your expansion?
Yes, we will.
Okay. And you've said what the consequence of that would be in terms of the longevity of the landfill, whereas if we continue to send waste 10 years, if not 18 years.
That's
so
correct.
If we were to decide not to send waste there and you're successful in your expansion, then it would effectively make the landfill open for much longer than it is now, than it would be otherwise. Now, I have some other questions specifically more about my constituents.
Can I just for a second, and
sure.
If you have another question, Counselor. So in our calculus, we have looked at all of our options in terms of expansion, the economics of expansion. And as you can imagine, Waste Management, the company, has spent a lot more than they had planned, budgeted for at this point in time. But in our calculus, in terms of expansion and staying open, I mean, there is the possibility that waste will not flow. If this resolution doesn't pass and you have the RFP and we don't prevail in an RFP, we understood that that might happen. Mm-hmm. But we said, notwithstanding that, we would continue to operate. So I just wanted to make sure that was on the record.
Good. Thank you for the clarification. It's my understanding that even though you receive metro area waste, you don't receive waste from the entire metro area. What portion of our metro region waste historically has been sent to Riverbend? What portion?
The majority of it is from Forest Grove Transfer Station,
Washington County. And where is Forest Grove Transfer Station is collected from where?
Just pretty much from the west side. Okay. So the dividing point is 26. So it's from the west side. And the rest then is on the east side goes to Columbia Ridge.
Mm-hmm. Now, my other question is, as I'm passing on from concerns I've heard from my own constituents, is if we were to make this choice and then waste from that traditionally has gone there would either go to your landfill at Columbia Ridge, which is much farther away, or to a landfill which is owned by someone else. And so either way, that's going to have an impact on your business model. And so I would be curious to know, and my constituents would be curious to know, what impact that would have on their rates that they pay for garbage, if any.
Yeah.
And I'm not expecting you to give me a specific dollar and cents.
Yeah, I can go.
Yeah.
Sure. In the short term right now, as you're aware, we're diverting a lot of the metro waste to our competitor, a different site down Coffin Butte, down right. in Corvallis. And because that is essentially our issue, we don't have the permits for Riverbend expansion. We are absorbing the cost differential for transportation from Riverbend down to Coffin Butte. Once the contract runs out with Metro and as we go forth, once the RFP is done, then that savings or that differential will have to be picked up by the ratepayers.
Right. Any idea what kind of an impact that would have in terms of percentage or real cost?
I don't know off the top.
But there would be some. You're indicating there would be some.
Yeah. If I may just add a bit more to that context. So you ask a good point. All things being equal. If Riverbend isn't in the mix, you'd have a transportation component because it's the closest landfill in the metro region. So just all things being equal, the cost would be higher. But the unknown is because you're going to exert competition in the RFP, we don't know what the pricing is going to be. Everybody's curious as to what everybody else is going to do. But it's hard to know going forward. But not just with the mix as it is, transportation would be more expensive.
I appreciate that. I'm collecting information with which I can that'll help me make
sure.
my choice. But I need to know those facts. So, thank you very much.
Councilor Stacey.
Okay, Mr. President, with your council's indulgence, I'd like to ask Bryce and Paul if he wishes to come back up. Bryce, can you give us some information about the waste shed of Riverbend? I'm not sure how decisive Riverbend's future is in the policy that's in this ordinance, but it's certainly of great interest to everyone who's testified today. But I believe you have some information both about where the waste comes from today and what cost might be associated with the redirection of that waste.
Yes, Councillor Stacey, I'm happy to answer that question. First of all, what we did is we're just talking about Washington County ratepayers whose waste traditionally went to Riverbend landfill, and we're talking about the scenario of after 2020. We're talking about communities like Westland, Tigard, Tualatin, Beaverton, Hillsboro, Wilsonville. And I can give you kind of a short answer as far as the rates question, if that would be helpful. If you're looking at the waste swap scenario that's going on right now between Waste Management and Republic with the two facilities, we put that through our flow model, and tried to model what the additional collection cost would look like. And for an average West Side ratepayer whose waste traditionally went to River Bend, 32-gallon weekly collection, it's about 33 cents additional per month. If you're talking about a commercial account, a typical commercial account might be like a three-yard container collected weekly, and that's about $5 additional per month.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, Bruce. Yeah.
Thank you. Certainly.
Other questions, Bob?
No, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for anybody that's there?
No. Good.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Yep. There is no one else who wishes to testify, then I'm going to declare the hearing closed. Oop, do I do that? Yeah, I close the hearing. And second reading, council consideration and vote are scheduled for Thursday, May 25th. Next item on the agenda is ordinance number 17-1400, a second read. Ms. Papsdorf, could you read that ordinance by title only?
Ordinance number 17-1400, for the purpose of annexing to the Metro District boundary approximately 82.18 acres located in the North Bethany area of Washington County.
First reading and public hearing for ordinance number 17-1400 took place on Thursday, May 11th. Before I ask for a motion,
folks,
if you all can move your conversations outside, that would really be helpful.
Ina's on it.
Congratulate each other later. before I ask for a motion, I'd like to note that Councillor Harrington was excused from the May 11th meeting, during which the council declared any ex parte contact or conflicts related to this annexation. So let me ask Councillor Harrington, do you have any ex parte contacts or conflicts to declare?
No.
Thank you very much. Do I have a motion on this ordinance?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion?
Mr. President, Councilor. I'm very pleased to recall from the past presentation that this takes more than half of the remaining land in the North Bethany area into Metro's boundary and available for development now. And so we're reaching the end of these not contentious but certainly somewhat time-consuming for our staff ordinances to annex property. Good show.
Indeed. Okay. Any other discussion? If we have a roll call.
We did.
Already. This is second read.
Okay. Councilor Harrington?
Yes.
Councilor Craddock?
Aye.
Councilor Collette?
Yes.
Councilor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councilor Stacey?
Aye.
Councilor Chase?
Aye.
Council President Hughes?
Aye.
Motion carries. So item 7 on the agenda is a public hearing as part of the public comment period for the 2018 to 2021 Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program, fondly known as MISTIP. We are about to open our hearing as part of the comment period for the 2018 to 2021, I just said that, Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program, or MISTIP. We also invite residents to comment online or through letters, emails, or phone calls through May 23rd. More information about the MISTIP and how to comment are available at OregonMetro.gov/, I suppose that's backslash, right? MISTIP.
MTIP.
It's actually MTIP.
It's not. Can take the man out of Hillsborough, but you can't take Hillsborough out of the man.
MTIP. Or Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program.
There we go.
Which clearly is MTIP.
No S.
and not the other one. The MTIP documents, how all federal transportation money is spent in the Portland metropolitan area. It also documents state and locally funded projects
that may significantly affect the region's air quality. This update lists funded transportation projects scheduled in the region between 2018 and 2021. As the federally recognized Metropolitan Planning Organization, which is the MPO, Metro updates the MTIP every 3 years, collecting information from the Oregon Department of Transportation and the region's cities, counties, and transit agencies. It also includes Metro's Regional Flexible Fund allocation that we, the Metro Council, approved in April. The Metro Council has also scheduled a legislative action hearing on the 2018 to 2021 MTIP at our July 27th, 2017 council meeting. I am now going to open the public hearing. Is there anyone wishing to testify in support of the application? Would you come forward? If you're in opposition to the application, come forward. Don't try to race each other. And seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close the public hearing. And that's it, I think.
That's it.
Good. Next item is Chief Operating Officer Communications.
That was really exciting. Sorry. I wanted just to let you know about the status of the Stafford IGA, and then I have a couple of events I want to make sure you know about. First, the Stafford Intergovernmental Agreement between the three cities around Stafford, Clackamas County, and potentially Metro has been approved by the city of Tualatin. It was also approved Tuesday by the city of Lake Oswego, and it's going to be considered this evening by the city of West Lynn. I hear from Roger Alfred that there were some minor changes that were discussed from the last version you had, but none of the there's no negotiated changes that everyone can agree to that previous draft. So right now everyone is considering the previous draft that you saw. And then assuming West Lynn approves it this evening, Clackamas County will consider it next Tuesday, May 23rd. Then it will come to you as part of the final wrap-up adoption package when we get done with the Multnomah County work and the Clackamas County work for your consideration. Questions?
How's Multnomah County doing?
I wish I knew all the gory details to that. I know that they've got some additional work to do because they have to adopt some of the same findings that Clackamas County has to adopt, so that there's so that when the package comes back to you for final action, it's all wrapped up in a bow and we don't have any inconsistencies.
The word that we get from our friends at Multnomah County is they're not doing anything that doesn't relate to the budget right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And this would qualify as one of those
things. I'll double check on that so that I can let you know next week if there's anything that's of concern. We're assuming everything's going fine at Multnomah County. If there's any other news, we'll let you know next week. Okay? All right, then the two events I wanted to make sure I drew your attention to. Matthew Rutford sent you an email last Friday about an event that's next Thursday, May 25th, I think from 6 to 8 p.m. at Expo, celebrating the eighth graders of Beaumont Middle School who've done work again this year on opening the doors to Vanport's history. You might remember that they have a teacher at Beaumont, Kirsten Parrott, who the last 3 years has done a project with her eighth grade classes focusing on things that have happened in Portland's history, specifically around communities of color at Expo. And so then at the end of those projects, they come and have a celebration of the work of the students. And so you'll be able to see 3 years worth of work from the eighth grade students and get to meet some of the eighth grade students who have done oral histories of their work around Vanport and its history in Portland and also around Expo as an internment center for Japanese Americans during World War II. I can also tell you that their eighth grade jazz, or not their eighth grade jazz band, their competitive jazz band, the Jazz Ambassadors, are also going to play. So if you haven't had a chance to hear the Jazz Ambassadors, you should go.
What school is it?
At Beaumont Middle School. The alma mater of my children, so of course I'm deeply a fan, but I also think it's a really great connection that Expo has to the community, and it's a great connection for these young people to have those of us who are involved in running Expo actually see and participate in the work that they've done. So if you get time next Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m., and Matthew says there'll be refreshments. So I don't know about you, food's a motivator for me. I assume, to eighth graders, that may not be milk, but I assume it'll be cookies, yeah. And then I wanted to let you know also that the zoo will be honoring the 43rd anniversary of the passage and signing of the Endangered Species Act this Saturday on May 20th. And they'll have keepers at various exhibits around the zoo where we have endangered species interpreting those species on behalf of the public, particularly sea otters, California condors, and elephants. So if you have time, you might want to either share this on your social media or come to the zoo. But the weather's supposed to be good, so I'm honor-bound to say take the max or go really early or go really late or prepare to ride the shuttle.
Yeah.
So it should be a really good and very busy day at the Oregon Zoo. All right. That's all I have.
Hey, thank you. Councilor Communications. It lit up and then said, okay, Councilor Collette.
To give you one update, and that is that the Willamette Falls Legacy Project Partners Group met yesterday and approved to send back to you for approval the preferred concept design for the entire Willamette Falls site, the public access to the site. Second, they approved the preferred phase one of the project. And then finally, we approved extending the IGA on the project, which keeps Metro basically in the driver's seat to build phase one of the project. So all of those will be coming back for your review as well. But there was unanimous support among the partners, and we had a bit of a little celebration. Nothing like champagne, just hands shaking and hugs. It was a really, really exciting meeting, and I so look forward to all of you having the opportunity to see the design and all the details. It's really just spectacular. And we will be having a public reveal of the design on June 3rd. You'll be hearing more about this, but starting at 1 o'clock at OMSI here in Portland. And that's all.
Thank you. Councilor Dirksen.
Thank you. I just want to report that we had our monthly meeting of the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation this morning, and it was a pretty busy meeting. We had a little bit of an update on the state transportation package in that members of JPAC had received an email from Senator Boquist asking for their input on some issues that are before the committees as they consider the bill. And one of the things that the state is still considering is whether the regional surcharge would be imposed through action by the state, or if they would write the bill such that it is imposed by an action of a local action. And in discussion with our group, and our recommendation was, and we're crafting a response to his email in which we're expressing our preference that it be imposed by an action of the state for a couple of reasons. One, because we've already discussed in the region and kind of negotiated what a governance structure would be in the region if it were done as an action by the state. And also because politically it would be, the state is also assuming as part of this action that we would subsequently put a bond measure before the people to complement the state action. And recognizing that if the surcharge required a local action, it would reduce the amount of political capital that we would have in the region in order to get that subsequent bond measure passed as well. So we will be drafting that letter, the gist of which was approved by thumbs up this morning, but we'll be drafting the letter by four signatures by members of JPAC to submit back to Senator Boquist. We also acted this morning on the resolution on regional flexible funds that we subsequently acted on this afternoon with regard to distribution of monies for the bottleneck projects, transit, all the other things that we talked about. There was significant discussion around that, and it was not a choice easily arrived at, but eventually we all agreed, or generally agreed that this was the best step forward, as was what was proposed. We also voted to make a recommendation to council to approve the Powell Division Transit locally preferred option and the RTP amendment. Also, to recommend to Metro Council the additions to the National Highway Freight Network, and also a recommendation to Council to move forward with the RTP update with the actual project selection process. So those were the things that were on our agenda this morning, and we actually ended 12 minutes early.
Wonderful. Do in part, I think we have to credit where credit is
due.
You do a wonderful job of running the meeting, but our dean of JPACT, Commissioner Roy Rogers, thoughtfully asked whether we really needed to hear again all the details of the freight plan and one other.
The National Highway Freight Network.
We read them by title only. Is that what you're saying?
We basically, by acclamation, said, good plan should pass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Without a staff report. Cool.
Councilor Harrington.
I just wanted to mention that we had the first open house, the first phase of multiple phases for planning the East Council Creek Nature Park, which is just north of Cornelius. We had a very nice turnout, and staff did a terrific job, as always. Thank you. And the empanadas were delicious.
Oh, boy.
I had the beef empanada this time versus the jam ones.
Yeah.
Oh.
We ever have food like that?
You had pie.
Pie.
Yes.
Oh, that reminds me, Mr. President. I attend. Are you done?
I'm done, yeah.
I attended the annual breakfast of Travel Portland at the Convention Center this week. And what reminded me of that was that food, that breakfast
salmon burrito,
remarkably delicious, yes. and the program itself was enlightening about the continued importance of tourism and our Convention Center's role in promoting that tourism.
And a live band at 7 a.m.
I missed that.
Ice cream.
It was a 7:30 arrival.
Councilor Craddock, you've been very patiently waiting.
Ice cream for breakfast?
Yes.
Works for me.
As an appetizer.
You start that more often. Right?
Yeah, very proud
of it. I skipped that course.
I didn't have it.
Go ahead, Councilor
Craddock. Oh, thank you. Scott Robinson mentioned this last week, in a few minutes I'll be going over to the Oregon Convention Center. Tonight, the Daily Journal of Commerce is having their annual awards to construction projects that deserve recognition, and the Oregon Zoo's education facility is up for an honor, we hope. Anyway, we've at least been invited, so I will be joining the staff at that tonight. I don't know if you remember that last year the Elephant Lands was up, and not only did the Elephant Lands receive the award in its category, but the grand award or the overall award. So we have, let's see what's going to happen tonight.
Another candidate now.
Let's hope. Yeah. We score, so thank you.
Good.
I have a would like to get a thumbs up approval for a waiver for MERC Commissioner Ray O'Leary to attend, represent us at a FAM thing.
Familiarization
tour. So we're all in favor of that. Sounds like it's a unanimous thing. I'm going to go tonight to an awards assembly out at the Hillsborough Chamber, which is the third awards event I've been to this week. One was the Consular Corps Awards on Monday night, and then, of course, yesterday morning or morning before last at the Travel Portland one, and tonight in Hillsborough. And the common feature of all three is that Bill White is receiving an award. The third award this week that I've seen him receive, and I'm going to point out to him that I have not received any awards during those three meetings. So,
well, you're not done yet. He's done.
I'm behind. Yeah, he's done. That's true. So anyway, with that, I'm going to scurry out, try to get ahead of the traffic, and be out in time to do that. So if there is nothing else, we are adjourned. Next meeting is May 25th at 2 p.m. in the Metro Regional Center.
Thanks. Don't forget to sign stuff. If I don't see you,
Brown give you all Japanese
beetle
cards.
Okay.
I have one of those, and they're very colorful. A little frightening, but colorful.
Just what we need. Creepy crawly reminders.
All organized. You have a plan.
What were those?
Peonies. Peonies.
Oh, no. Oh.
When I lived in New England. Those buggers.
Yeah, because you got to get your water too, right?
In there, and then they crawl.
Oh, yeah, get in the house.
That's where I'm creeped out.